Welcome back to the Club Podcast. I'm joined by Rory Jennings, and we're going to talk about some major, major things in football. Obviously, the FA Cup final, the Champions League final, and Spurs have got a new manager, amongst a host of other things. How are you doing, mate?
I'm quite entertained by your opener.
Yeah?
Yeah, well, you spoke about massive things. You were like, you know, the FA Cup final, obviously Manchester City have a Champions League final to worry about, Manchester United, the biggest club in the world, arguably, and Tottenham. How did they... Tottenham fans have got to be very grateful to you there. You were very generous.
Very generous indeed.
But I think Tottenham and Ange Postecoglou and whatever else, I think Tottenham have done very well to even be on this podcast.
On the billboard. I'm a very charitable person after our FA Cup final win against Man United. Mm. We have to dissect that and, of course, how that leads into the Champions League final for City. Obviously, we were doing the stream together live. It was a momentous day for Man City, the first Manchester Derby FA Cup final. To beat Man United in any game for a City fan, based on the history, is obviously iconic and big. But to do it in an FA Cup final, to score the quickest goal in FA Cup final history, to get back in it after a very contentious decision, and to quiet all the Man United fans, just to breeze past them in the second half and make it a dominant performance, it was something special, Ward.
Yeah, I agree, Booth. I think it was a perfect performance. And I think people have started to kind of rewrite the story a touch with it. People are saying that Manchester United did very well and they played very well and it could have gone either way. And I just don't think that's the case. I don't think there was any real jeopardy in it. I think City started like a house on fire, obviously the fastest goal in FA Cup history, beautiful strike as well as being an early goal and a historic moment for Wembley Stadium. Manchester United then got back into the game, flukily, luckily, and the score was 1-1. And at that point, people are saying, oh, the game's in the balance. It could have gone either way. It certainly couldn't. Like, they were level for about 20 minutes, and then normal service was resumed. I think it was a very one-sided cup. I love the FA Cup as well. Right? I love the FA Cup final. I love the spectacle of the cup. I love everything that goes along with it. I love Abide With Me. I love Wembley Stadium for what it represents rather than what it is. I think it was a good cup final, but I don't think it was a pulsating cup final. I think Manchester City were always going to win. And what Manchester United fans won't want to hear is not only were they always going to win it, but on some level, I think it could have been there for them. But Erik ten Hag got certain things wrong.
What are they out of interest?
Well, mate,
you know, it's harder. We were doing the stream live. Obviously, we're seeing it unfold in a kind of live fashion. Looking back at it, what are those decisions? What would Man United fans be aggrieved by?
Two things stand out. I don't think they'll be aggrieved, by the way. Manchester United fans will protect Ten Hag from this. One of the things I think we can say is Ten Hag's fault. One of them isn't, because history has taught us what we've learned off the back of that cup final is that Jadon Sancho isn't capable of starting for Manchester United. Like, it's all very well to talk about him as a young man who needs nurturing and protecting, but I'm afraid he's 24 years old. It's cost 70 million quid. It's time for him to be delivering cups for Manchester United. Like, that stage, you know, playing in an FA Cup final against Manchester City to preserve the treble at Wembley Stadium in front of your fans, like, that's a dream. That's an opportunity. Can you imagine if you were to put, you know, a true winner of Manchester United icons over the years, they would use the platform of an FA Cup final against Man City with the context to use that as an opportunity to demonstrate their brilliance. Jadon Sancho did nothing. Like, he literally, he was completely ineffective. I would say that he had one contribution to the entire game. Not a bad contribution, but do you know what the contribution was? He protected the penalty spot when when the penalty was given, and the furore around the penalty and the debate. City players, as well they should, by the way, but were having a little bit of a moment around the penalty spot. Just giving it a little kick, making sure that it's scuffed, making sure that it's not going to be perfect. You know, make sure that Bruno Fernandes doesn't get the exact purchase on the ball that he will want. Jadon Sancho didn't allow that to happen.
Mm.
That's the contribution. That's it.
I remember one run at the defence, one in 90 minutes.
You've got a better memory than me.
Carl Walker, I think it was. I always thought,
how did he get on in that exchange, bud? I can't remember the incident.
I think he kind of got the ball back. He kind of played the ball back. He didn't beat him aggressively. But yeah, exactly. He sort of laid it back to someone else. And it was just like, if I was a United fan thinking, look, I know they spent a lot of money. They're a side in transition. I've said that for years, of course, and United fans would agree with that. You know, they're not there yet. But come on, that front three was so lightweight. Rashford was poor again. He's gone off the... I mean, where he was the second coming since Jesus Christ, apparently, in football. I mean, he had a good... It will turn out in the history books, when we're studying this season in 10 years' time, he had a good 8 weeks. Mm. He had a good 8 weeks.
Yeah, you're right.
He had a good 7.5 weeks.
You know you're right. I bought into it. I bought into it. And he did have a brilliant 8 weeks.
Of course, like, he did, yeah.
But yeah, he wasn't there. He was completely anonymous. Christian Eriksen?
Like, Christian...
Christian Eriksen was just totally and utterly. I remember when we were live, I said to you, mate, you do me a favour. I'll do anything when Christian Eriksen does something in this game. I would have actually settled for something bad.
Hmm.
Like, but you know, if you make a mistake on a football pitch, at least you're taking responsibility. Like, you know, some of the best players that I've ever seen, some of the most mercurial players, they made mistakes.
Hmm.
Arjen Robben would give the ball away. Joe Cole would give the ball away because the nature of their position is that you're trying things that are more, they are less likely to work than work.
Mm.
And if they do come off, you probably score a goal. But if they don't come off, as they probably won't, you've given away possession. But at least you take responsibility. You open yourself up to criticism and you take the game by the scruff of the neck yourself. Christian Eriksen, he's just a spectator.
Goes through the game.
Just a complete spectator. Yeah. He did literally nothing. Like the game would have flowed in exactly the same way,
mm.
whether he were on the pitch or not. Like,
That's worrying. That's a worrying sign if you're a Man United fan.
But mate, I don't think that Jadon Sancho should ever have the opportunity to play for Manchester United again. Just not only because of his performance, I thought was a disgrace, but if you juxtapose your feelings about his performance and put them alongside Alejandro Garnacho's effective cameo,
mm.
he gave...
Could have scored, didn't he, in the final five minutes?
There was a moment, right? It was about the 91st, 92nd minute. And I was sitting with you, and obviously you're now sort of very confident and whatever. But there was a moment that most people would have probably dismissed. But I think it is a microcosm of him, and it demonstrates quite how non-Man United Jadon Sancho is, right? Ball goes out of play. He's ran it out of play. And obviously City players are taking their time. Garnacho's having an argument with the ball boy. Get the ball, you know, get the ball back, get the ball, making sure that the City players are taking the thing, urging his players forward, making sure that they're forcing the issue to try and force something. He's desperately trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
Jadon Sancho did nothing like that. And I think Ten Hag, with hindsight, I don't think it was a mistake at the time, because if you threw Garnacho in to start, you go, why is he doing that? They've got Sancho on the bench.
Yeah.
But with hindsight, it was a mistake to play Sancho. And I think moving forward next season, Sancho's done. Did you think about what Ten Hag has done for Sancho this year? You know, he let him have that time off and all that. He's broken his neck to allow Sancho the terrain to flourish. For what? What's he got out of that?
He's completely gone off the boil. There's no question about it. We have to talk about the handball. Have you changed any kind of your perception of that moment?
Well, do you know what my issue with it is, Boovy? I think you got it right at the time. And I think the vast majority of people that are talking about football agree with you. My sticking point is that Jack Grealish doesn't know where the ball is and therefore doesn't know where his hand is safe. And I think that's dangerous.
Hmm.
At our level of football, where we play, the first thing I'll say to someone I'm playing with is face it. Like, you face it, right? You're aware. Jack Grealish has got caught under the ball. He's then launched himself blindly.
Hmm.
Used his arms for leverage, and he doesn't know where the ball is. And I think that being kind of out of control, because you have no idea what's going on, you can suffer a penalty for that. But sometimes you have to acknowledge those around you and listen and learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 95% of people that I've spoken to and 95% of what I've read and heard about the game would suggest that I'm wrong here.
Yeah, I think you are as well. I think if we'd lost the game, I would have been so aggrieved by that that you probably would have never heard me on a podcast with you ever not talking about that moment. It would have riled me up for the rest of my life. It would have made me a bitter old man, some would say. The rules of football have to allow footballers to play the game of football, and that ball gets whipped around quick. I know what you're saying about facing the ball and having some sort of control, and you do have to show that as a footballer. You have to have some, can't just flail your arms around and hope the Lord protects you. Of course, I think Jack Grealish is doing his due diligence, even covering Wan-Bissaka at the far post. His arms, come on,
too harsh,
so harsh.
Do you know what? Either way, I don't think it would have made. Look, the penalty was given, they scored, and then you ultimately won the game at a fairly easy canter. And two out of three in the bag, Champions League to come.
Two out of three in the bag. I think the FA Cup final was the moment where, in the league, we're obviously a fantastic league side. We won five out of the last six. That is a system, that is a process of beating sides home and away, getting close to 100 points a season. The FA Cup final reminded me how hard it is to win a treble. You have to win finals. You don't play finals, like Mourinho said. So the Champions League final, Inter Milan are, they're not the most talented side. They're not the most robust side going. I think it's a massive opportunity to play a similar kind of game that we did against Man United, nullify their threats and nick a couple of goals from individual moments of brilliance that we've got. İlkay Gundogan. It might be Jack Grealish in Turkey. It might be Erling Haaland. I'm hoping it's more Erling Haaland because I think he could score a hat-trick on his day. Didn't have the best game against Man United. I think he could have had probably scored a hat-trick with missed chances. How do you look at the Champions League final in terms of, would you change anything if you were Guardiola? Keep the same lineup?
No, I don't think that. You're not playing a team that are good enough to have to accommodate them in any way. You know, if you're playing certain sides, you will have to amend your philosophy, amend your personnel, maybe to counteract something that's going to happen in the opposition. They're so open. They're going to play two up front. Most teams, when they play Man City, they try and pack out the midfield. They're not going to do that. And I don't really want you to win it, to be totally frank. I do appreciate the brilliance of City, though. I do acknowledge that this team are sensational, unlike anything ever assembled before. And it would be in keeping with that level of performance to win the treble. But I think you've kind of won it because it felt to me, I mean, you say things like this flippantly and then you don't necessarily mean them when it comes round. But I called the final, the semi-final. So the game against Real Madrid, I pretty much said whoever wins this is going to be either of the Milan sides. Because let's face it, the Italian league isn't especially strong. You look at the players playing in it, you look at the players that have gone there from England even that seem to be flourishing. And
Chris
Smalling's flourishing.
Tammy
Abraham's flourishing. Fikayo Tomori flourishing. It doesn't bode well. And the other thing is, Inter aren't even very good. They're the third best team in Italy. They're the third best.
I think it'd be different if it was City-Napoli, which I think a lot of people were thinking. They could blow us away. They got,
Osimhen up front, that, yeah.
A bit of a random kind of assortment of players. It could be Edin Dzeko against City, and it could be heartbreaking.
That's scary, I think, for you, though, right?
Yeah. That goal he scored against AC Milan kind of killed the game in the first, I think it was in the first half of the first tie.
It's a contest because it's the final, and they're in the final, and they therefore deserve the respect of being acknowledged as a finalist. So they're capable of beating anyone because they're in the final. The other reason is sometimes there is a poetry and symmetry in football that is just, it is just unstoppable. You know, it's like the planets have aligned, and there is something in Edin Dzeko winning the Champions League for Inter Milan against Man City. There is something in that. You know, if Chelsea are in the final and Romelu Lukaku is playing against us, I am terrified.
Yeah. I hate that.
If he's playing for us, I don't think he scores.
Yeah.
But if he's playing against us, he'll score too.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just think, this guy's going to score. Yeah. Like William Gallas scored a winner. I remember going to Arsenal. It's 1 December. Funnily enough, I know exactly. I flew back from Vegas, right? I went to the Mayweather-Hatton fight, flew back from Vegas from that fight, and went straight to the Emirates. We lost 1-0. William Gallas scored. Of course, William Gallas. Of course we got beat. Like, we were brilliant that year. Obviously, we lose to Arsenal, and obviously, William Gallas scores the winner. There is something about that.
I hate that.
Carlos Tevez was obviously going to score against Man United.
Yeah,
obviously going to happen. So there's that. Yeah. Then there's Lukaku just doing something unreal.
Out as well. Lautaro Martinez can do something as well, of course.
Yeah.
But apart from that, you are scratching a little bit. I think there is a gap between the narratives in football, which I completely agree with you on, in terms of these big narratives, the history and the kind of romanticism of it. And then you take that away and you think,
you're
Ilkay, Gundogan, De Bruyne, Foden, Grealish, Mahrez, Bernardo.
What do you reckon then?
Crazy.
Cards on the table, Boovy.
We beat him 1-0 and we hold it in the corner and the City fans are absolutely shitting ourselves for a good 20 minutes in the back end of the second half, but we beat them 1-0 for me. That's my early prediction.
Yeah, 1-0 is a very safe and sane and likely prediction for any final, I think. I think it's a good prediction if you really want to win the game. I'm going to say more than that just because I want excitement. I'm going 3-2 Inter.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate the support. All I want is an entertaining final because the one we had, shocking quality.
Brilliant.
Oh, it was a great
result.
Brilliant quality.
I look back on that.
It might actually be the worst final I've been born in Champions League final history.
Yeah, I mean, there's famous bad ones, aren't there?
Juve.
Yeah, Old Trafford.
That's terrible.
Old Trafford was like famously poor. I think they're generally quite poor though. Like the quality of the Liverpool Tottenham game was.
Yeah, that's true.
Because there's so much at stake, and nobody, ultimately, these footballers, they're people like us, they don't want to put a foot wrong. Like, everyone wants to be a hero, but what you really don't want to be is a villain.
Yeah, absolute villain.
So no, it's going to be incredibly exciting in Istanbul as well. Oh,
beautiful part of the world.
Beautiful
part of the world. I'm led to believe, who knows? But yeah, beautiful city. Should we move on to slightly less exciting news maybe in the footballing world, from a Champions League final, where Spurs used to be, to Ange Postecoglou from Celtic, back-to-back winner in Scotland with the Scottish League with Celtic, of course.
Won a treble.
Took it off of Rangers a couple of years ago. Probably the biggest, I was thinking about this on the way into the podcast, the biggest thing to happen to Australian football ever.
Harry Kewell's starting a Champions League final.
Harry Kewell's up there. Yeah. Australia obviously being in a World Cup final. But yeah. But in terms of...
Mark Viduka stopping Arsenal winning the league.
Maybe in terms of the management side of Australia.
This is a great game. Yeah. I mean, I never...
Spurs are a massive
institution. That's why I love this podcast, right?
Yeah.
This is a great game. Forget the running order. Forget everything, all the hard work that Elliot and Jack have done in the back room. Let's just play a great game. Australian footballing moments over the years. I've got a great one. I remember being in Brazil watching
Tim Cahill's goal.
Tim Cahill
the chest
goal.
And volley, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And on his left foot.
Tim Cahill's goal.
Who was that against? Do you remember?
No, man. I remember when I was watching it. I was in Belo Horizonte, just about to watch England play Costa Rica.
Obviously, they got some moments. I'm not trying to denigrate Australian football, but it is in the present day, yeah. Australian football, to have a manager in a top six side, one of the biggest clubs, whatever you say about their trophy record, in Europe. Massive stadium, Harry Kane being managed by Ange Postecoglou.
You've made a good point. You've gone too far with it.
Spurs are one.
None of that.
They're top 15 clubs in Europe in terms of size. They are.
Yeah,
I don't like them. I can't stand them. They're embarrassing.
I'm trying to quantify how true.
They're bigger than most size in France. They're bigger than most size in Germany.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, fair.
You know what I mean?
Fair. No, and it's a huge appointment for Postecoglou. My issue with it is I don't think he should have taken it. I think that you're on a hiding to nothing when you aren't the first choice. So you remember when Nuno Espirito Santo got the job and they obviously didn't want him. They tried basically everyone. I think they even tried Conte sort of first and it didn't work out. And then they were calling him ninth choice Nuno, weren't they? You're on a hiding to nothing because everybody knows that you weren't the first choice. It makes your life very difficult in that situation. And that's the same here. Postecoglou obviously wasn't the first choice. They wanted Nagelsmann. And I don't know who else they've wanted in between Nagelsmann and actually going for Postecoglou.
Well, Spurs fans will say Poch. Whether that's a reality in terms of footballing reasons, we don't know.
But
Postecoglou, surely. The big thing for me, I've seen a little bit of his kind of a couple of games the Celtic have had under him and some of his press conferences. He comes across a bit grumpy, a bit grisly. I think the image of the guy, it shouldn't matter. But he looks a little bit kind of a bit grisly.
Do you know why that could affect him negatively? Do you know why it could? Okay, let's try and say, I think we can all think of loads of reasons why it doesn't fit. In terms of why it does fit, let's play that game. It fits because of the way he plays football. And Tottenham fans genuinely believe that their team play a specific way. They don't want Conte, Mourinho, they genuinely don't. They want the famous five. They want Klinsmann. They want Dumitrescu. They want Chris Waddle. They want Glenn Hoddle. They want David Ginola. They want that. They genuinely, weirdly prioritise that over other things, or at least they pretend to because they don't get the other things. Postecoglou does that. He's won a treble. Celtic fans love him. His recruitment has been good. If you look at a lot of the Japanese lads that are doing the business in Scotland... They're his men. Obviously, he was in Japan. So the recruitment is good, and that's going to have to be the case because Tottenham are in dire need of a rebuild. Like, you know when other managers have gone there? You go, okay, I don't think it's a great club for you, but there's some wicked players there. And like, you know when Mourinho was there? And you give Mourinho a front three of Bale, Son, Kane. You're like, all right, that's all right.
Amazing.
And then the generation before, it was Dele Alli and Kane, and it was a really good midfield, wasn't it, with Dembele and whatever. You know, it's like, good teams. This is not that.
Should we talk about the list of players that they're listening to offers for? Hugo Lloris, Perisic, Davinson Sanchez, Ryan Sessegnon, Lo Celso, Reguilon is still there.
Mate, I'm listening to all these players. You wouldn't get a tenner for anyone you've said so far.
You get a tenner, a pack of what's-its.
not one player that you've said there, firstly, gets anywhere near the Tottenham team.
No.
So they're not really your players. They're not really options for you, are they? If they can't play for your team, they're not options for you.
Yeah. So you sell them, get rid of the deadwood. Some of these players will be hard to get rid of because I think there'll be a lack of interest.
Yeah, but that's what deadwood means. The problem is, the term deadwood what it actually means is it means they don't do a job for you, but they don't do a job for anyone else. And therefore, you know, basically you can end up with a load of dead wood. And my club has a lot of it because the valuation of one... Chelsea will tell you that Christian Pulisic is a £50 million player because of what we paid for him and the potential and whatever. If nobody's ready to meet that valuation and you're not prepared to come down from that valuation because he's probably a £20 million player, it means he's dead wood. He's literally stuck on your books. All of that... is applicable to
it's like buying an NFT of a cartoon cat. And then, you know, 2 years ago, it's worth 250 grand. Now it's worth 50p.
Are you friends with John Terry? How did
I don't have any cartoon cats ready to sell. But when the market goes back up, I will
maybe
have a
you
few
will.
To sell. Just like Harry Winks. Once the market's back for Harry Winks in 2035, maybe they'll get some
and
quid for him.
They're going to have to do it without Harry Kane, which I think is fair to assume that he now won't
be. I still think that's the one thing that Postecoglou can hang his hat on, that I think there's a good chance he stays. Even for a year, I think Spurs will be bitter enough to keep Kane a year.
Impossible now.
You think because of Benzema, Real Madrid, because of Man United?
I think there's too many glaring opportunities. There's too many behemoth clubs that are in dire need of Harry Kane's services. You know when I thought City... And then City went and signed Haaland, and you're like, okay, it doesn't fit. Therefore, he might stay at Tottenham. You know, if Benzema was 3 years younger and still playing at Real Madrid, you go, okay, it's not necessary. You know, if Cristiano Ronaldo was a couple of years younger and didn't go mental at Man United and was still there, okay, it doesn't fit, maybe he stays. But there is no way that he can stay when Los Blancos are in need of a centre-forward. They're not only in need of a centre-forward, they're in need of an icon because of what you did to them. Mm. You, in that humiliation at the Etihad, have awoken them. They've been a little bit passive, and now they've gone, okay, do you know what? Not again. We're going to sign Bellingham, and I think they're going to go, we're going to sign Kane.
Do you think?
Yeah, and I love the idea of an English, sort of a new Real Madrid being, bodes very well for the England national side.
I hope so.
Bellingham and Kane.
I only worry about how the fans treat
They'll love
players that gone over there.
They treat good players well, though.
You'd hope so. They didn't treat Modric very well. It took him a good year to get sort of blooded in there. And Gareth Bale was he's been slagged off for years. I mean, the guy's won 4 Champions League titles.
But he didn't behave very like he genuinely prioritised guys.
And obviously, Kane's not that kind of character. He's a bit more.
I think they'll love
lenient
him because
as a person.
Kane is the perfect professional, isn't he?
Yeah.
But look, Postecoglou at Tottenham, I just don't know. I imagine that he's probably going to bring a lot of the good Japanese lads from Celtic with him.
Ooh, you can't say that. Really, I don't think there's any quality in the Scottish League. With all due respect, I think that's his issue. I think look at some of his managers. Look at someone like Conte, for example. He brought over Perisic from Inter Milan, someone that he kind of knew, linked to players. You know, Guardiola had that kind of connection to Spain. The issue with Postecoglou, and they got no choice now, Spurs, based on the managerial merry-go-round. There is no quality in Scotland. The league's as worse as it's ever been compared to the riches of the Premier League. Maybe 10 years ago you could have done that, but not right now. Not for me.
And I think some of his performances in Europe are troubling. Like in Europe, Celtic did not do well. I think the performances weren't bad, but a lot of the results, you know, they went out the group bottom and whatever else.
You know, Celtic went in the league with Joe Art and goal. You know, a player that obviously Spurs literally rejected because he wasn't nowhere near good enough. And even Nuno Espirito Santo, his issue will be attracting players, let alone managing names that he's never even managed before in terms of the quality.
And it's such a risk. Like, there's talk, say Harry Kane leaves, he's going to bring Kyogo with him from Celtic. And you're just like, big shoes to fill, my friend.
They're massive, man.
Big shoes to fill. So no, I don't really know what's in it for Postecoglou either.
If Kane leaves, obviously we've got to factor in, okay, he's gone.
Think about the upgrade, though. They need a new goalie. They need a new centre forward. Yeah. That defence, everybody was telling me Romero was a good player.
You know they'll stick with Forster?
No, they won't.
Trust me. They'll go into next season with Forster and goal, mate.
Do you think?
Yeah.
And Eric
they'll
Dyer.
Play 4-4-2 with Ange Postecoglou in an ill-fitting suit from Primark, screaming at his lads in Aussie.
There's so many bad players in that
Honest
squad.
To God.
They've got to totally rebuild, and I just don't think that Postecoglou is the man for it.
Without Kane...
First manager sacked next season.
Yeah, I agree with that. Without Kane, where do they finish? Obviously, you've got to factor in they will sign a couple of players, 50 mil players. They'll probably spend 150 mil.
Well, the trouble is now... It doesn't matter where you finish. Do they finish in the top five? Because if they don't finish in the top five, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no difference between finishing sixth and...
12.
I mean, the Europa League isn't what Levy needs. So it doesn't really make a difference. Mm. And I don't think they make top five.
Top five, that's crazy. Should be easier. And they should be in the position based on the ease now of the extra spot, the stadium.
And they used to be a top four team. They kicked Arsenal out, hadn't they? But there's been reversed. And Newcastle have thrown a spanner in the works for everyone.
If Kane stays,
yeah,
top five. Do you think you can manage him?
Oh, he's going to have to get enough goals. Kane, no, I don't even think the almighty Harry Kane can take that team, that Tottenham team, this iteration of Tottenham into the top five. Remember, Conte didn't. So why on earth are we thinking Postecoglou can?
What world are we living in?
I just wonder how... I'd love to know the truthful number of managers that Daniel Levy called up on the blower and went, fancy it?
Honestly, it's like having a night out with your mates and they've all gone home and you're calling up who's still around and it's 4 a.m. You know, on a cold Saturday night in November and they've all gone to bed.
It's worse,
they've all gone to bed.
It's the nightclub is ending and you're single and fancy a bit and... There's a fatty in the corner.
Don't say anything to your mates.
No. Tell nobody. It's our secret.
You have the fear in the morning. You wake up thinking, what?
No, you're out the window. You're gone. You leave your shoes there on purpose.
Yeah, I don't even put your socks on. Just put your shoes on.
I actually think that you've gone home that night. You haven't stayed over.
Yeah. You call the bolt as you're kind of in. Yeah. Yeah. You get the bolt pre-registered.
Yeah, I'm only going to be a few minutes here, mate. Yeah, get on your way.
Oh, God, poor Ange Postecoglou. Let's talk about something maybe a bit more optimistic in the transfer market. McAllister to Liverpool. I, for one, think this is unbelievable business from Liverpool.
In a good way?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unreal.
Are you serious?
McAllister, obviously, as we're recording this, it's almost 95% confirmed. But for less than £60 million, could be about a £50 million transfer.
I did not see you going this way with it.
I really like it. He reminds me of a Genie Wijnaldum for Klopp. He's got the legs off the ball. He's got the work ethic. I think winning that World Cup takes you up a little bit of a level as well. He's got a goal in him. He's got quality on the ball. I think he'll fit into that left side of midfield really, really well for Liverpool. And the big factor is you can't sign someone like McAllister with Premier League experience. He's ready in his career to make the step up to Champions League level football. Maybe, you know, he'll have to wait a season at Liverpool for 50 million quid in today's market. It's great value. Mm. City were interested. I think that's a benchmark, you know, interested.
The thing is, though, Booth, I don't think when judging the player and judging the club, I don't think we need to factor in the money. So is it a good signing? It's not. I think the whole deal. What about just the player? Is it a good player going to Liverpool?
He's a good player going to Liverpool.
A player that's good enough to elevate Liverpool back to title contenders?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I am. Because the thing about Liverpool, it's different between Man United, City, Chelsea. We could all argue that all these teams in the last 5-6 years, if you've not won the league, there's probably been a lack of a world-class player up front for Chelsea, up front for United, maybe a left-back, centre-back for City, the lack of world-class quality. Liverpool won the league in the Champions League by... a nucleus of players that are hardworking. They all signed into the Klopp approach. They all worked in unison. If McAllister does that to a high level, they don't need Bellingham. It'd be nice to have Bellingham, but how did they win the Champions League final? They had Henderson in midfield, someone that elevated because of Jurgen Klopp. Mohamed Salah wasn't signed as a Galactico. He came in and did a job. Yeah. Sadio Mane is a hardworking player. So they got a lot of these players, and I think McAllister fits the mold of someone who's going to work so hard to get to that next level, like Genie Wijnaldum. It reminds me a little bit of that kind of... He's an all-round midfielder, isn't he? He's good quality.
I'm slightly less convinced than you. The reason why I would never doubt the signing and why I'm not going to sort of publicly sneer at the signing is because of the like mesmerising, brilliant nature of Jurgen Klopp. Jurgen Klopp has the ability to turn water into wine. We've seen him do it. So many players have landed at Liverpool as fairly average players and have gone on to become the best in the world. And that is because, not only because of the institution that's Liverpool, but also because of Jurgen Klopp and the combination of the two. You know, you get the platform at Liverpool, you get the opportunity at Liverpool, and then Jurgen Klopp, his tactics and his man management change you into something special. But no, I don't... I think it could work because of Klopp.
Mm.
But no, I don't really think he's particularly good. I don't think he was a standout player in that midfield for Argentina. I don't think he's even the best midfielder at Brighton.
Mm, that's interesting.
No. I think it's an interesting signing and it's quite a progressive, thoughtful signing. And if Klopp does what Klopp does, then yeah, of course. But I definitely don't agree with you on that. Me and you aren't on the same hymn sheet here.
Mm.
I think it's I think he's all right. And I,
but I think you can say that about Wijnaldum. I keep going on about Wijnaldum because Fabinho is a deeper midfielder. It's the same position. I think he'll occupy that kind of left side of midfield. They never kind of replaced him, Genie Wijnaldum. Wijnaldum, what's happened to him since he's left? You know, I know he's had a bad injury. I'm not saying that, but you know, I think he'll float around. He won't give the ball away. He'll work so hard off the ball. Mm. I'm not even saying he is a world-class player.
In terms of what, like, I think Wijnaldum's not a bad shout here, but in terms of what Wijnaldum would contribute to a team, assist goals and things like that, when it wasn't his priority. Mm. Look, Klopp could get it right, definitely. Mm. But I think that in terms of that position, they were sniffing around Mason Mount. They haven't got Mason Mount, so they've already kind of missed out on their main man.
Yeah.
And no, I don't think it's particularly inspiring. But obviously,
they need an extra
gonna,
man around him as well.
This
it's
is
going to
bite
him.
Me, isn't it? This is my lack of belief.
I
in
just
the
don't think
mortality.
You see the trajectory. I think where you're what you're saying now is actually bang on more than probably what I'm saying. But the trajectory of what Klopp can do to a footballer.
Mm.
I think you could argue Jordan Henderson when he, you know, who was Jordan Henderson before Jurgen Klopp came around? Do you know what I mean? It's similar to a load of players.
No, the Jurgen Klopp contribution to this cannot be overstated. Jurgen Klopp has worked magic on far worse talents and made them far better players.
I think Pep wanted him as well. You know, 10 league goals as well this season.
I know, but again, I think that is fairly...
So that is okay. So
no, but Pep Guardiola wanting a player doesn't necessarily mean that I have to rate that player. For example, he wanted Jorginho, and Jorginho's a player I will never rate.
I want to move on to a beautiful 11 that the lads in the back room have devised. The hardest Premier League 11, Roars. This is an 11 of players in the Premier League you wouldn't want to mess with on a Saturday night down a back alley after leaving the pub with your mate.
I'm a really good judge of this.
Yeah, I thought you would be.
I'm a really good judge.
I actually went over my 11 for a good couple of hours before we met up today to do the podcast. Being very specific. Do you want me to start with my goalie?
Yes.
I'm going Jordan Pickford in goal for the hardest keeper in the league. I think even though he's short, I don't think you want to mess with short people sometimes. Jordan Pickford, I think he's represented England in big moments. I remember the Colombia game in the quarterfinal of the World Cup, getting bullied by Yerry Mina and people like that, and the fans, it was a nasty atmosphere, and he sort of held himself really well. Yeah. He's a hard footballer for me.
Yeah, I think you're right, because he's also scrappy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're all big, they're all athletes, so now we have to separate. And what does Jordan Pickford have that maybe Alisson doesn't have?
Snidey, horrible,
hateful. Bad you need tattoos. To be a bit of that.
Yeah.
Also, can you imagine, like, he's often on the lash in Newcastle as a former Sunderland sort of icon.
Yeah.
He's game, man. I agree. I think Pickford is a good shout for this.
100%. Right back, Carl Walker for me.
Think he's handy?
I think he is. I think you don't want to mess with people from Sheffield. I think that's a hard town in its own right. A lovely town, but a hard town nonetheless. I think a big thing as well, if you're in a fight with Carl Walker, mate, his pace is going to get him into some serious situations. If you're in a cage in martial arts with him or something, he'd be running across that cage, he'd smash you out.
Okay, well, I can put you to the test here. Do you think he beats up in a straightener? So they're in a pub, they've had a falling out, two of them go outside, only the two of them go. No tools. Do you think he beats up Trent Alexander-Arnold?
Yeah, Trent's as soft as anything.
Do you think he beats up Aaron Wan-Bissaka?
Yeah. Aaron Wan-Bissaka's quiet, introverted.
Do you think he beats up Reece James?
That's hard. That's a good shout. Yeah. Reece is
a bit Mike
Tyson,
isn't
he? He's got a bit cold about him. Yeah, he's a bit cold.
But
good shout.
No, but hang on, I'm not fully convinced myself.
I think Carl's a bit got older. I think older is a big thing as
older
well.
Older is a big thing, and
he's 30. What is he? 33.
Reece James wears mad clothes. He doesn't. He strikes me more
London
of a hipster.
Boy as well. It's...
What about definitely harder than Cesar Azpilicueta? Kieran Trippier.
I put Trippier in at left back because he can obviously do a job at left back.
I don't know if you're playing the game in the proper.
Yeah,
way.
Yeah. Because I couldn't think of a hard left back. I mean,
it's left back. I think is the weak position.
Yeah, in the league.
Generally, at every level, the weakest person in your team...
Just left back.
Stick him at left back.
I played left back recently, Ibrox.
Who would be your shout for left back hardest?
Oh, it's hard. I know softest is Zinchenko. He's as soft as puppy shit.
Is he soft?
Yeah, he's soft as anything, isn't he? He was crying when they drew with Bournemouth. Do you know what I mean? No, so I think I'm struggling with the left back, lads. Anyone in the back room?
So what did you do? You went Kieran Trippier left.
No, I'm not. Andy Robertson. Someone's just said Andy Robertson. Jack's just said that. I can't believe Andy Robertson. He's the most fake hard you've ever met.
Who wins in a straightener between Luke Shaw and...
No.
He's a little barrel, though.
You've seen him running away.
Yeah, but he barrels down.
Yeah, barrel down the hill. You're rolling down the hill.
What, do you not... Dan Byrne gets chinned.
Dan Byrne's fake hard.
If anyone that can reach...
He's fake hard.
Could you reckon Ben Chilwell can have some?
No, I was going to say he's as soft as Zinchenko for me.
Do you think?
Ben Chilwell, yeah, he flicks his air back and all that.
I've got one for you, boys. Estupiñán.
Estupiñán can have some.
Not for me.
Yeah, he can have some.
Yeah, he can have some. South America.
Not over Trippier at left back.
He can have some.
Trippier can play left back. For me, Trippier and Kyle Walker.
Okay, let's just play a game. Who is the softest, genuinely? Who is the softest left back in the league? I know the answer, and you haven't said them yet.
For me, it's Zinchenko.
Who gets knocked out by every other left back in the entire league? I know there is a clear answer to this. Non-negotiable answer.
I know you're going to say Rory.
Oh. There is one left back that every other left back has a WhatsApp group, and the group icon is that guy's face, and they all mock him. The group is called something derogatory about this left back.
Oh, I don't know. You're going to have to give me help.
Mark Cucurella.
Oh, Cucurella, of course.
He gets battered by everyone.
He gets bullied. He gets thrown around like a ragdoll.
By everyone.
Yeah, poor guy.
Swung around by his hair.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
Lasso him.
We're going to have to do a softest 11 next week. But I definitely think you're right there, mate.
Centre halves, I've got one definite.
Yeah, go on, you go.
Ruben Dias one.
Yeah, I put him in there. Yeah.
Ruben Dias he's definitely handy. I think a lot of centre halves are handy. Part of what makes a good centre half is being up for it.
Yeah, exactly. For me, it's Lascelles at Newcastle. He is. I've interviewed and met him. He is as hard as anything.
You reckon?
Lascelles, yeah.
Do you reckon he has not Van Dijk, for example?
Van Dijk's brittle after that injury.
We're talking about fight here.
Yeah, yeah. You got to think about injuries.
I'm talking about this situation. A pub.
Yeah.
Locking.
Yeah, locking.
2 a.m. on Kilburn High Road.
He's there. He's carrying in the corner, protecting his ACL. Van Dijk, after what happened. Yeah, he's shitting himself. You've got to pick up players
that don't
care about getting injured. Vinny Jones didn't care about getting injured. Do you know what I mean? Some of these players back in the day, you know better than me in terms of some of the hard nuts back in the day, but, you know, Roy Keane didn't care about getting injured.
No.
He didn't care about injuring other people. Van Dijk, he'd be shitting himself. He wants to kick a ball around every Saturday and he don't want his ACL to pop again.
Who else is a handy... Who else can really have it?
I said Thiago Silva in my initial 11, but there was too many centre-backs.
I think he's secret hard. Don't get me wrong, he's game.
Secret hard.
And he certainly wouldn't bully him, but he doesn't strike me... What he's not is filth.
No.
And to win this, I think you need that edge.
Lascelles is filth for me. But okay, I don't mind.
If you want to go Lascelles.
If we've done this. Not Romero. Romero's short and he's too short.
Christian Romero, Snyder.
Not for me.
Okay, let's stick with Lascelles then.
Okay.
Central midfield, we've got to get this right.
We've got to do 4-4-2, by the way, because it's the most Brexit aggressive, hardest kind of formation.
What does it
mean
when people say a formation is Brexit?
It means it's
I don't understand it.
It's anti-antiquated. We're fighting the system, fighting the European overlords and their amazing 4-3-3
ticket
attacker.
So a 4-4-2 would be considered a Brexit formation?
Yeah.
Would a 4-3-3 be considered a Brexit formation?
No, 4-3-3 is close to what Barcelona were doing with Pep Guardiola.
Is the only formation?
Brexit's 4-4-2, pump it along to Kevin Davies up front, yeah. I love it. No, I don't love it. I don't love Brexit, but I love Brexit football.
I learned something.
Yeah.
I like that.
I've got two in midfield. John McGinn.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to have a Scotsman in there.
Headbutt.
They don't contribute anything on the pitch in terms of quality. There's no quality footballers out there for Scottish, no, with all due respect. They got to have something. They've got to get into the hardest 11 from the club. Surely, lads.
John McGinn. Yeah, I've got no issue with John McGinn. So John McGinn is in our hardest 11.
I wanted to put in Caicedo from Brighton because I think he's seen things. You know, like Adriano at Brazil. You know, you see photos of him, you just think, the guy's seen things.
Do you know who I always think has to be hard? Any player that has spent their entire career being kicked and it hasn't affected them. So like Arjen Robben, you could get in his head if you fouled him. Whereas Cristiano Ronaldo, for example, very hard. Like, I'm not suggesting he's in this team, but I just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You have to
David Silva was a bit like that.
Basically.
Zola, maybe.
Can you imagine, like, being Paul Gascoigne in Newcastle? Like, every week, someone must have been trying to break his legs.
Yeah.
And he didn't care. Glenn Hoddle, back then.
George Best.
Must have been trying to break it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. George Best, absolutely.
Would have got cut down.
So you want Caicedo in this?
for me, but it's a bit of a weaker shot. I don't know if anyone else is missing any big
I feel like you're missing the hard one, which is, for, I thought you were going to say Jordan Henderson.
Not for me. There's something missing there.
Jordan Henderson?
Something missing, yeah, something missing. I don't know what it is. It's just my gut reaction.
No, no, your gut is important to me. But... hang on, okay, so the two that I think a lot of people would suggest here would be a midfield pivot in your Brexit suggested formation of Casemiro and Jordan Henderson.
Yeah, I can see
think
what you're
thinking. The tackles in that team.
Yeah, it'd be unbelievable. I'm talking about hard, away from the football pitch. I think Casemiro, for me, strikes me as fake hard, a little bit, you know, a little bit performative. That's just my take.
Nah, mate.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to put...
I think all the Man United players are softer than anything.
Up until this point, almost everything you've suggested, I've been very kind and just gone with.
Yeah.
Unless you are furious...
No, I'm not.
Going Casemiro Henderson here.
Go for it.
I think you've
Go
got it wrong.
It. Go for it.
We're doing a combined one, though, so you have to... Also, I may then give way.
Yeah, yeah. You've had two. I've had a couple in defence, so I'm happy.
So can it be Casemiro Henderson?
Henderson. Yep, I'm happy with that. Cool. On the wings, we've got to have some English lads in our 4-4-2.
Tough wingers isn't easy.
I've put Jack Grealish in there, one of those players that you talked about, always gets cut down.
No,
he gets
a straightener.
Yeah, for me, Jack
Grealish.
Yeah.
Grealish.
He got smacked in the face by a Birmingham City
fan
in the second season.
He went down.
He got straight back up and scored the winner.
Down.
He got straight back up and scored the winner.
Fair point.
For me, Jack Grealish is actually low-key hard.
Do you reckon he could have it?
Yeah.
Also, what do you reckon he is in this? You know, if he's in a pub, so he's in Vegas and all his boys, right? And there's loads of them. In come another load of lads. Say he spots over there, like Ben Chilwell's getting bullied or something. Do you think Grealish is over there backing it? Or do you think Grealish
think
is
he,
like...
I think he is. Yeah.
You think he's over there back? He's doing what Keane did for Neville.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You think he's doing that?
I think he's that kind of player.
Okay.
I've seen him do it for City.
Fair.
Yeah, I'd
okay.
do that.
Is there anybody else that we're leaving out here? Is there something... What about that Flynn Downs who was like pinging people when he was on the... He was like fighting AZ Alkmaar.
We should throw him in for that out of due respect because that's probably the hardest thing we've seen from a football club. Yeah. In terms of Knowlesy as well.
Knowlesy should be in this team.
Yeah, exactly. Left wing. Just give him the ball.
No one's going to tackle him.
So we're doing Flynn Downs.
No, he's not enough of a start. I think you've got to go Grealish because it has to be a start.
Grealish gets in, then we've got one other position as a kind of tucked in midfielder, winger type.
Do you want it to be Flynn Downs?
I had Phil Foden as another
no.
one.
No, Flynn Downs.
Okay, and then we've got two up front. I actually think this is probably the easiest. Keen to see what you think. Jamie Vardy up front.
Yeah.
Hard as nails.
Yeah.
When he celebrated, he's wheeling off and celebrating in front of people doing that and all. He's proper.
Yeah.
Hard as nuts.
Yeah. Okay.
And then a big Norwegian lad up front.
Haaland. Yeah. Hard.
Hard as nails.
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
Hard as nails.
No. He's not the hardest man.
Tough as anything, mate.
Diego Costa irons him out.
Yeah,
I forgot
he's in the league, you know.
I know, the only problem is with Diego Costa, he's not looking
he's
fresh.
He's gone, isn't he?
Mate.
Midlife crisis.
Have you seen the bicycle kick? So bad.
It's not my nan.
It'd be like me doing it.
You make the contact.
It would be...
yeah, but you're decent. You go to the gym and all that. It's not my nan. It's not my nan having a go.
He literally...
You're throwing your nan at it.
He went, you know, to do a bicycle kick. Like the most perfect bicycle kick that you can ever execute. I measure every bicycle kick on the Richter scale of Trevor Sinclair. That's the best bicycle kick ever scored by anyone in the history of the game. The Trevor Sinclair bicycle kick for QPR. On the scale of Trevor Sinclair, it was 0.001.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
so bad. He went down so slowly. It was like falling over in installments.
Like a sack of potatoes.
Actually, it can't be Diego Costa. Just
if you get smashed.
Oh, what about a boy at Fulham? Mitrovic.
I was going to say that there's something a little bit performative about him for me as well. I think he leans into... I think you want to be hard.
It's,
you don't
it's
be,
Mitrovic. It's Mitrovic.
If you go around saying to people you're the hardest, you're usually not the hardest. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
He's not. It's not performative. He's not lying. Didn't he beat up a ref?
He touched him. He got 11 game ban.
Yeah, he beat up a ref, man.
That's how effed up the football world is at the moment.
I think Mitrovic is harder than Haaland. He's not a better player.
No, it's not.
You've got
that.
An awful lot of City players in this.
Because we're as hard as nails, lads.
I don't think
we're about to win a treble, Wars. Come on.
You aren't winning a treble through violence.
Well, Roy Keane bangs on about how good the leadership was at Man United, this, that, the other.
Mm.
You know, they won a treble, apparently. He keeps going on about it.
Oh, that's fair. That's so far so good. Did you hear, by the way, how angry David Beckham was at...
That was pathetic.
And what do you think?
He said, oh, we had a bit more homegrown talent in the 11. Then someone tweeted, it was like, you had Schmeichel in goal as Danish. Mm-hmm. You had an Irishman at left back. You had, obviously, you know, Dwight York from Trinidad and Tobago, etc. He was on and on and on. So, yeah, David Beckham looked salty, and so did a lot of other Man United fans that we know quite well on Twitter. What am I going to say?
Who's the manager?
Has to be Big Sam, for me.
Yeah. Sam Allardyce is the correct answer. The only thing is, he's so much old. Like,
he's old,
Sam Allardyce was, out of all the managers, Sam Allardyce at 30, if you put them all at 30, Allardyce knocks them all out. No doubt. Big centre-half. Like, nobody... Can you imagine? Like, he's just like a Range Rover at the back. Like, I tell you who he wouldn't have liked playing against. You know, that kind of... Imagine like Kenny Dalglish spinning in behind him. He would have hated that.
Yeah, yeah.
But where was he? Preston. It's a hard place as well.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Allardyce, if everyone's 30.
Yeah.
Allardyce knocks out Dice, doesn't he?
Dice is a bit...
That's performative.
And the suit as well.
That's a bit performative.
Yeah, he leans into that.
Yeah. I think Allardyce is the correct answer. Okay, that's a hard 11.
I'm not doing David Moyes as well. He's too small.
No, Moyes isn't...
Small. But he is part of that kind of contingent. He's hard, but he's not the hardest.
No, I think it's Allardyce. I think it just is Allardyce.
Yep.
We just have to caveat it by saying, if they're all 30.
If they're all 30.
If
in their prime.
Yeah.
Let's move on to overrated or underrated. Very gassed to see what you think about this.
I'm
Mason
gassed.
Mount.
He's underrated. But he's clearly underrated because you're right. About to tell me that he's rubbish. Everybody that we speak to...
Can't predict the future, Ross.
I certainly can. I've sat with you long enough, my friend. We met 5 years ago. I certainly can. I think the reason, Boov, is because you're about to tell me how rubbish he is.
Potentially.
Lots of people will agree with you. And yet, the clubs sniffing around him are Manchester United, Liverpool and Arsenal. The three biggest clubs in the country. Three clubs who, two of the three, have made it into Europe. They all have ambitions to win the league next year. And so Arteta, Klopp and Ten Hag all want him. That's without the Chelsea references. That's without Tuchel and whatever. They all like him. They all want him. They all want to start him.
Mm.
You're about to tell me he's rubbish, which proves that he is underrated.
I always got told as a kid to not be a jack of all trades, master of none. And I'm a masterful football commentator
chancers and jacks. Like, we are all that.
In the footballing world, Erling Haaland's a great example. He specifies in one thing, one thing only, scoring goals. Mason Mount, he's not a world-class finisher. He's not a world-class powerhouse in midfield. He's not a world-class controller of the game from the base of midfield. Does he work hard off of it? Yes. Is there a reason he got dropped after the first game at the World Cup for England? Yes. There's a mixture there. Is he a good quality? Is he a James Milner type? Slightly different positionally. Yeah, I could see him floating around. James Milner was never a world-class pinnacle player, but you ended up playing for all the big clubs. Villa, Newcastle, Leeds, City, Liverpool.
I think you've got to be careful. You know when you penalise somebody in your assessment of their ability because they're often used at a position? I think you have to investigate as to why. So the reason that Mason Mount has sometimes played as a right winger and sometimes played deep-lying midfielder and sometimes played at the top of a diamond is because he is the best at all of those positions, and therefore he can do it. Like, you can't ask certain other players. So he's a victim of his own brilliance. He's the victim. Like, say you have Christian Pulisic and Mason Mount available. You can't ask Christian Pulisic to do anything other than play in one particular position.
Yeah.
So Mason Mount has to be deployed all over the place. If he goes to Manchester United, which sadly it's looking like he will, and he will just replace Christian Eriksen, he will play that left number eight.
Hmm.
He'll be one of their best players next season. And you, my friend, will eat humble pie.
I will do so if I get it wrong, which is very, very rare. Declan Rice, I can go with this. I think he's very, very underrated. I think he'll go on to be one of the great midfielders to come out of his country in the last 10 years. I think he'll win a Premier League at least. I think he'll win a Champions League at some point if he gets his... It's all about the transfer trajectory, getting that bang on. I think he's a world-class midfielder with what he can do. I think you talk about Mason Mount being able to do loads of different things. I think Declan Rice can actually do more, obviously slightly different things. He's less of a forward-thinking player. I'd rather have Declan Rice than Mason Mount in my squad every day of the week.
The one issue here is, does anybody disagree with that? Do you hear people saying that Declan Rice isn't destined for the Champions League, isn't ready to play in the Champions League, isn't capable of playing for virtually any team in the country? I feel like, I don't necessarily think he's overrated. I just think people are very aware of his brilliance. People are very aware of how good he is. So for us to call him underrated, surely we have to say that those things aren't happening.
I think there's underrated. A difference, though. I think people, can he play for Man United tomorrow? Yes, we all agree. And Arsenal, and even Chelsea, of course. But going on to actually be a big, big player in those sides as well. I think that's the debate that people have. I think that there has been a little bit of a question mark about, you know, even with England, I think he's been instrumental for England's rise in getting to the first final since 66 and the World Cup run, even though it was cut short because of Harry Kane's failure. Declan Rice, he's more than just a good player at Man United. He could be their best player at Man United. He could be the best player at City.
Yeah, but you see, now you're overrating him. You're calling him potentially the best player at Manchester United in a team where there's Casemiro. Like, he's not going to...
He will, though.
He will not...
He's still too young to say
he
that.
He will never, ever win what Casemiro has won.
But Casemiro arrived at Real Madrid and that's a transfer trajectory.
No, but as a career...
We benefit.
No, but we're looking at career-wise.
Declan Rice, technically speaking, is as good as Casemiro.
Declan Rice will not end his career with anything like the trophy.
Yeah, that's down to where you're born. Yeah, it's down to the fact that you know, he was playing Porto. You know, Real Madrid go and buy him from Porto, whatever it was. You know, not every footballer lands at Real Madrid and wins four Champions League trophies.
But you know,
Declan Rice is a West Ham.
Yeah, but you can't put it down to
West Ham. You can. It's harder to get him out of West Ham than it is to get a Casemiro out of Portugal.
But you can get him. He's going to have the opportunity. He'll compete in a lot of Champions Leagues, Declan Rice. My point is...
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
I feel like you're overrating him. Like, Mikel Antonio did this. Mikel Antonio said he's the best defensive midfielder in the world. He's not the best defensive midfielder in the league.
Yeah, that's true. I think he could go on to... I'm not saying now.
No,
but he's better than Casemiro now. Of course not.
Yeah, but Boovy, we can only judge what we've seen today.
He was 23, 24?
Yeah, but Boovy, we can only judge today. You're giving yourself too much of a...
The transfer that when it does happen this summer, he'll get to a level a lot higher than people think. And that's why I think he's underrated.
You're being coward. Coward. You're being a coward. Because you know when we were speaking about Jadon Sancho and I said, I don't think he should play for Man United again. That's a bold, definitive statement upon what I've seen. The easiest thing for me to do there would be to say, well, you know, there's potential and who knows what he could do in the future. Yeah, that's all true. But we have to judge it by today. And today, Declan Rice is a very good player, but he's nowhere near the best midfielder in the world. Nowhere near it.
Yeah, I think...
So you've overrated him?
Yeah.
Go on, 1-0 Rory!
You win. I won the Brexit 11. The hardest 11. Finally, Graham Potter. And I think it's an interesting one because obviously he's linked to a few jobs. Linked to Crystal Palace. He's linked to West Ham, potentially. Quite light links. Is he underrated or overrated?
I don't think we should talk about this man on this podcast. I genuinely think that we are doing... This is a footballing podcast. We're talking about footballing issues. No, we're talking about football people.
Roars.
This man is a complete and utter shambles. He is a joke and he does not deserve to have his name mentioned upon this podcast.
You could argue Lampard was so dross at Chelsea in his second stint that he actually made Potter's legacy look far more stable, far more successful. Big wins against AC Milan in the Champions League, etc. Yeah, Potter looks like a revolutionary now that Lampard came in and won basically zero football matches in 3 months.
Lampard came in... It's a vibe hire, as you would call it. He came in because it was so toxic.
It was so toxic under Potter, and it could never
get that toxic under Lampard because people love Frank
Lampard. Is he a top 10 manager in the Premier League? For me, a quick
Potter?
Answer is yes.
You're joking.
He took Brighton to a top 10 finish.
Are you joking?
Graham Potter is a top 10 manager in the Premier League.
Of course he is.
With the right club.
He's not a Premier League manager.
He's a Premier League manager.
He's not a Premier League manager. His next job should be in the Championship at best.
No.
Completely out of... Look,
no.
Okay, maybe he could do a job at Palace.
They've been a Premier League club for 9 years, 8 years.
Yeah, but then if you're a top 10 manager in the country, you don't manage Palace. Roy Hodgson isn't in the top... Look, it isn't about if the club finish in the top 10.
Yeah, all right.
You're saying
top 10 biggest club in the Premier League.
Yeah, you wouldn't call Roy Hodgson the top 10
manager.
Well,
Brighton aren't top 10 then. Brighton are, you know, Deserby's a top 10 manager. You know? So you could argue Palace have been mid-table for a good 6-7 years. Good stability. Vieira took him top half last season.
Oh my God, imagine if he goes there because of the hatred Palace and
Brighton. He's been seriously linked. And you think, you know, if they can keep Hodgson in a kind of advisory role, maybe that happens. But
maybe Potter can do a job for clubs like Palace, Brighton,
Brentford.
But he is not capable of working. You know, when people were saying, oh, he's next in line, he's the heir to maybe the Tottenham throne, or
he could do a job. I'd take him at Tottenham over Ange Postecoglou.
I'm actually surprised that they haven't done that. Do you think they've explored it?
I think there's a lot of, but you can't go with Mourinho, Conte, Villas-Boas back in the day. It's not a good look.
Yeah.
You do Potter, who failed. I mean, even Conte obviously succeeded at Chelsea. Yeah.
Hoddle.
You can't just take second.
Hoddle was Chelsea manager first.
Yeah, yeah.
Villas-Boas.
There's way more examples as well, isn't there? You know, Spurs taking.
You've named four. Yeah. Is there more than four?
I'm just thinking, like, vaguely speaking, I think Spurs have got a history of taking other clubs kind of...
Yeah, Chelsea. Second, there's a direct link between Chelsea.
Second,
obviously, Mourinho,
secondhand.
Villas-Boas, Conte, Hoddle. I'm thinking if there's any more. Is there any more? They've definitely followed. They've seen a blueprint by Chelsea and they've tried to emulate it.
Yeah. The Taxi 4 from this week.
Wembley Stadium.
Why?
I'm putting Wembley Stadium in it. I just think it's... Like, I love Wembley for what it represents, but it's just a nightmare, isn't it? And when you watch an FA Cup final there, like, when you imagine how that game would have been played out and the atmosphere in the stadium if it was at a neutral venue. So, you know, two Mancunian sides playing, there's a train strike. Played a game at Anfield, maybe. But certainly doesn't need to be played further than Villa Park, does it? And yet, you know, you're traipsing for miles. That ring around the corporate area is terrible. The view in the stadium isn't great. You're always, wherever you sit, you're miles from the stadium, from the pitch, sorry. Mm. Wherever you sit.
Yeah.
Because of the rake in the lower part of the ground, you're miles from the pitch. Because you're a million miles in the sky at the top. Like, it's quite a good view from the corporate area, but I don't really care about them. I just think that game would have been so much more intense and so much more beautiful if the fan experience had been better. And I like the idea of, I don't even know if we need a national stadium.
I think we do, but based
other
on
clubs,
the history of
other countries,
Wembley.
Yeah, for history and identity, I think we do.
Yeah, I think the FA does for revenue, unfortunately.
No, I do about that.
Obviously, yeah.
They do.
Sad reality, isn't it?
I don't care about that either.
I'd agree with you 99%, except the 15-second goal that Gundogan scores. I think the atmosphere is absolutely electric from what I can understand from not being there. It looks incredible.
But Wembley Stadium gets a taxi.
Get that big stadium in the taxi somehow. Fit it in there and drive it away from us. It is a terrible stadium. I agree with you. Taxi for me has to be Bruno Fernandes.
Why?
He's an embarrassment. He's a little slimy Man United cheating rat, and I can't stand anything about it.
Have you been talking to Marvin?
Marvin? What about?
About Bruno Fernandes?
No, I've not said. I don't follow that guy, thankfully, on Twitter.
He doesn't like him either. You two are peas in a pod.
Hopefully not. No, but Bruno Fernandes, complete melt. He is the definition of what a melt is, Roars, honestly. And he was pushing Bernardo Silva at halftime and all that. And, you're meant to be teammates for Portugal, and even the Portuguese lads don't stand you. So no football fan likes you, except a couple of Man United fans who are absolute melts as well. Every footballer as well. You're meant to be in the footballer kind of association. Everyone, you know, all footballers kind of stick together, band together. Even fellow footballers can't stand the guy. He takes a slimy little penalty. Man United tried to cheat and they still lose the FA Cup finals. A taxi for Man United. It's a taxi for everyone associated to Man United.
So what are you doing? You've got to be more specific.
No, upon my rant, I've expanded to just Man United. Them in a taxi and shove them back up to Manchester and spend another 1.5 billion quid to win one League Cup in 6 years.
Well, there we have it. Thank you so much to Big Bad Boovy. It's been an honour as
pleasure,
always.
Mate. Thank you.
And thank you to everybody for listening. We really do appreciate it. Would you do us a favour, please, and leave a nice review. Give us 5 stars. It massively helps us out. Thank you for tuning in, and we will see you all on the next episode of The Club.